Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Comey Over Show. We apologize. It has been 10 days since the announcement that James Comey...
Oh, I thought you'd done something different with your hair.
Thank you for getting it. I appreciate that. In fact, we thought it was time to catch up.
You've never had hair that long.
Never.
Well, I've known you for 28 years.
Yeah, you're talking about a comb.
And your hair has never been long enough to get over your eyeglasses.
Yeah, that's... I did have shoulder-length hair in high school. But my hair is thinning on the top now.
That's a way to say that.
And this is the mortal sin. This is the inexcusable... fashioned faux pas is to do a comb over. Shelley, on the other hand, could come to work in pigtails and it would be cute.
I don't know about that. There might be some other words.
Yeah,
that could
I
be
suppose
used.
A beehive. If you did a beehive, people would say that you went too
Tony,
far.
Now you've
that's
done
too far.
You've
yeah.
given me a visual of Tony Weaver with a man bun. I can see it. I can absolutely see that.
If I'm dressed entirely in black and have a man bun, then maybe I'm.
I've never even seen you get a 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, I don't know what to say. You haven't looked very close.
Well, no, I'm just saying you don't like to have long hair at all.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Well, when your top's going bald, you don't want your size to be long. That's true. Shelley Irving. assistant professor of the UK Physicians Assistant Program. Hey, Shelley.
Hello.
And also Rick Phillips. Oh,
can I go
Kevin
first?
Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure to talk to you about our web presence. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org, Moorhead State Public Radio website. Find Health Matters. There's a list of shows there. You can download the audio. You can send the audio to a friend. You can sign up for the podcast. Again, if you know what a podcast is, then you know what to do. Certainly go out there and listen to all the shows. We put a lot of good content out there, and I do think that while it may not make you feel so cerebral, you will have a good laugh every once in a while. That we try real hard to do that. Let us know how that turns out by jumping over to facebook.com/HMRadioshow. There you'll find our fan page. You can log in, you can sign up, you can like the page, and then you will get our updates. We send out fairly regular interactive type things where we show you things that are either on the show or part of the current news media. And it's not like the current news media doesn't provide us with ample material on a daily basis. So you just never know what you're going to see up there. But there may be... this is a way to kind of get closer to the show, if there's some particular topic. I mean, over the years, we've had tons of shows be developed around comments on the web or through direct email communication or something like that. So we certainly encourage you to jump over to the fan page and leave us your feedback and comments. And again, you can find that at facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor back again for the spring and summer season, the Tick Fixers with their top six quick tick fixing tricks. That's right. This is the ineffective and dangerous methods of removing ticks and also what you do to remove ticks. We'll start off this fractional portion talking about what you do not do to remove a tick. Number one, don't use those sharp forceps. If you puncture or crush the tick, you may in fact be injecting the tick's contents into your own body. Number two, don't apply substances like petroleum jelly, gasoline, nail polish, or other noxious substances to the tick. This, first of all, makes them mad. The tick only breathes about 3 times an hour, and they can easily avoid suffocation for hours at a time. So unless you really have nothing to do for the weekend, we do not recommend you try to suffocate a tick. Don't apply heat with a match or a hot nail. Makes them mad. When they get mad, they throw up into your bloodstream. You don't want them throwing up into your bloodstream. Don't use a twisting or jerking motion to remove the tick. Pull it straight out. And don't handle the tick with your bare hands. I saw one of the methods of disposing of a tick is you put it in a plastic bag. Just put the tick. You don't crush it. You don't kill it. You put it in a plastic bag, and apparently you send it to the landfill in a plastic bag. Eventually, I suppose the tick would get bored or frustrated at being in the plastic bag and depressed or something. I don't know. The problem here in Eastern Kentucky is we have a lot of front yard septic systems. If you flush the tick down the toilet, the tick just simply shows up in your front yard a couple of days later, and you really haven't done anything. At no point did they mention hitting the tick with a hammer or using a pair of slip joint pliers or wire pliers to crush the tick, which is very, very satisfying. We at Health Matters, we don't recommend that, but we have known it to happen from time to time. Shelley, how do you get rid of ticks?
Well, growing up, we'd do the match thing. And then we've also done the try to suffocate it thing as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you get the tick off, do you wish it personal harm? Or do you release it into the wild?
No, we don't want it coming back.
So how do you keep it from coming back?
You can catch it on fire.
Fire about 2 inches high.
Yeah. Fire. Fire is pretty
embedded
good.
In hot wax while there's a candle burning above it.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of good
that's
ways.
That's a good one, too. Yeah. How do you get rid of a tick?
Usually it's the hammer or the pliers.
But the hammer requires precision.
I got time.
And the odds are you could break something else with the hammer.
Well, that's true. If you have, we have a concrete front porch, and the tick goes out, and the tick, I guess. And the thing is, it leaves the tick's intestinal contents right on the front porch. We're not barefoot type people, but still, it's not the most sanitary thing. You're supposed to not wish the tick any ill will. You're supposed to simply remove the tick from the environment, but not touch it. And you almost have to touch it to set it up for the hammer or the
pliers. I'm a burn and flush guy.
Yeah, you just burn catch it flush. On fire, and you don't need to touch it.
Burn and flush. Burn and flush.
All right. So
a little dropper to a gasoline, a match.
Avoid ticks, say the tick fixers. Wear long pants. Tuck them into your socks. That's called the Phillips look.
Tony.
Inspect your skin, especially your armpit and groin areas. Love those areas. Got to take a look at them after you've been outdoors. If skin exposure is unavoidable, use DEET. Ticks are best removed as soon as possible. If you've been outside, check the same day. Use a blunt forceps, not a sharp forceps. Once it's removed, wash the bite with an antiseptic. The person who removed the tick should wash their hands as well. Routine antibiotics not necessary. And check your tick to see what size and color it is.
When you go with a hammer, you're obviously trying to get some kind of a feeling.
A personal satisfaction that this tick will regret the fact that he tried to suck my blood.
When you were a kid...
And it's a male tick, by the way.
Did you like playing with fire? You were a little boy. Come on now. Did you like firecrackers?
No, we did firecracker. We did the M80s when they were real M80s.
So you liked fire?
Not that much, though.
So, because I was going to say, it's sometimes, at me, I had a little bit of pyro, just a little bit.
And you like to see the ticks burn.
Well, what you do is you put them on you take one of the big, like, 2-inch matches with the wood matches, and you put it on the head of the match, and then you use another match to light that head so that it goes up in a ball of flames. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to use your fingers. You have to touch it to get it on the match, right? Which exposes you to diseases. You see the problem,
Tony,
with your scheme. Yeah.
You know how many diseases there are around me every day? I mean, you know, we live on a farm.
Rick's very unimpressed with the disease exposure theory.
I mean, you know, Tony, you get out of your car at the farm and, you know, what do you got?
That's our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, with their top 6 quick tick fixing tricks. I've got 8 things you need to know about James Comer.
You got 5 minutes.
I know, but we'll go reasonably fast because we got some other stuff to talk about this show. Number one, James Comey is tall. He's about 6'9".
Okay.
One of the tallest political officials you will ever see in your life.
Not anymore.
Ex-political officials you will see. Number two, he delivered the unprecedented October surprise. Unprecedented is a great word. October surprise last year that unprecedented Hillary Clinton.
It was pretty rough. I mean, that was pretty bad timing. And, you know, the funny thing is it's, I think people are so knee-jerk, right? Some people are so reactionary that they forgot how they reacted when this happened back in October, right? So this happened, he should be fired.
Yep.
When he actually gets fired, they're saying that he shouldn't have been fired.
Well, this is why I don't dabble in politics. You're absolutely right. The two parties have flipped on whether Comey should be fired or
it's
or
comical.
Stay. All right, but here's some things you may not know about James Comey. Number three.
There's a guarantee I don't know.
Yeah. Back in March 10, 2004, this was during the George W. Bush administration, Attorney General John Ashcroft was ill and incapacitated. White House lawyer Alberto Gonzalez went to his bedside to try to get him sign off on an extension of a wiretapping program, which the Justice Department's attorneys had deemed illegal. Ashcroft managed to make clear that he would not authorize the wiretapping, and Comey was the witness to that. And he told that story back in 2007 in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Number four, he was the guy that prosecuted Martha Stewart. Did you know that?
Nope.
She was indicted in 2003 because of a stock deal that was a little shady. This is Comey. Comey says the criminal case is about lying to the FBI, lying to the SEC, lying to investors. He was at that time a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Martha Stewart is being prosecuted not for who she is, but because of what she did.
Don't you think those things are what led him to the White House?
Yeah, I'm sure. He did also, he was part of the Senate Whitewater Committee investigating the Clintons back in the mid-1990s. So he is no friend to the Clintons through the ages. Number six, he was locked up and held at gunpoint by a high-profile serial criminal when he was a teenager. I think this is how he got his career in law. In October 1977, he and his younger brother were held captive in their home by the Ramsey rapist, an armed man who police were hunting, followed a series of home invasions. He assaulted babysitters in the area. They were locked in a bathroom. They escaped out the window, confronted, and bolted back in, contacted police. Number seven, overwhelmingly confirmed by the Senate in 2013. He has served 3 years. And the only holdout, there was one person who voted against him, and that is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. The only person who voted against him back in 2013. And number eight, registered Republican for many years, but when he came to office, he dropped his registered status. He did obviously work for the Republican Party. As well, while he's actually he served as FBI director for the Democrats. So that's our top eight fun facts about James Comey. You feel educated, Rick?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your favorite one?
Martha Stewart.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, I did not know he was the Martha Stewart lawyer. Next up from Columbus, Ohio, just released on May 10th. Researchers at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Again, they have access to a nationwide computerized database about emergency room visits. More than a quarter of a million children have been treated in the U.S. In the past 20 years for cotton tip applicator-related ear injuries. 1,000 children a month in the emergency room because they stuck these things in their ear. This is Chris Chitana, a pediatric otolaryngologist, a ear, nose, and throat doctor at Nationwide Children's. Far too many children and parents believe that ears should be cleaned at home and that a cotton tip applicator is the tool to do that. Because of this study, only captured injuries treated in emergency rooms, not doctor's offices, not ear, nose, and throat offices, there are even more children than 1,000 a month. More than two-thirds under age 8, 77% of the children were handling the applicator themselves. Dr. Jatana says these products should be kept out of the reach of young children. It's important for parents to teach older children that cotton tip applicators should never be used in their ears. The dogma where I came from was don't put anything smaller than your elbow in your ear.
Yeah. I mean, your elbows are fairly small.
Yep.
I mean, that's reasonable.
So, ear canals are self-cleaning, says Dr. Jatana. So it is unnecessary to clean a child's ear canals, but puts them at serious
risk. You believe they're self-cleaning?
That right there, I got to tell you, that lit me up. I've on my inbox, when I was reading this, I looked and it hit my inbox. The U.S. healthcare system spends about $600 million a year to extract impacted earwax. Meanwhile, consumers spend $63 million a year on over-the-counter earwax products. So no, I don't believe that, but I don't think a cotton applicator is the way to go. Well, we've come
Speaking
to the
of
end
going.
Of the first fractional portion. That's the way to go. Please stay tuned for our second fractional portion on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Comey Over Show. We're saluting former FBI Director James Comey and his 3 years out of 10 service.
Now you can have Comey over for dinner.
Yeah, so much you can do with this title. And feel free to use the title at home in your personal conversations. All sorts of things you can do with this. Our gift to you from Health Matters. Our sponsor remains the Tick Fixers with their top six quick tick fixing tricks. We will remind you of these six tricks, and this is what you should do. Number one, avoid tick bites. That's the key to avoiding tick-borne diseases.
Stay indoors.
Well, that. Wear long pants. Tuck the pants into your socks. Still not happy with tucking the pants in the socks. Still makes you look...
They'll never get married that way.
Yeah. Inspect the skin, especially around the armpit and groin areas immediately after outdoor activities. If skin exposure is unavoidable, use an appropriate insect repellent. And again, that is products containing DEET. Those more than 30% DEET should not be used on children. 24% gives you about 5 hours of protection, depending on, again, how long it takes you to sweat it off. There's also permethrin. Kills ticks and mites applied to clothes, and it will last through several washings. Number two, ticks are best removed as soon as possible because transmission increases significantly after 24 hours. So if you are outdoors, check every day. Number three, use a blunt angled forceps. That's the best way to get them off. Don't use sharp tweezers or forceps. You will puncture the tick, and that will not go well for you. Number four, once it's removed, wash the bite area with soap and water with an antiseptic to destroy any contaminating microorganisms. The person who removed the tick should wash their hands as well. Number five, routine antibiotics not indicated. Number six, check your size and color. Brown, the size of a pencil point, that's a deer tick. Brown with a white collar, size of an eraser, more likely to be dog ticks. Brown to black tick with a white splotch on its back is a Lone Star tick, and they can cause a very significant rash called Southern Tick Associated Rash Illness. It has a big red rash that goes out from the bite. The other thing about the Lone Star ticks, they're very aggressive biters. Those old dog ticks used to crawl up your leg and crawl up your leg and crawl up your leg and then finally bite your groin. The Lone Star ticks, they pretty much as soon as they land, they dig in. Mm-hmm. So that's another one. So that is our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, with their top six quick tick-fixing tricks, reminding you it is tick season. It is time to take and let me just say, it is time to take action on this because the ticks are not – ticks and mosquitoes are no longer a nuisance, something to be laughed at. The number of diseases they carry and the severity of those diseases is nothing that you want to mess with. So I was a guy that just said, okay, I'll get bit by mosquitoes. I'll itch for a few days, no big deal. I take mosquitoes very seriously now.
I still must have to get to your distinguished age before that happens for me. Because I'm still where you were.
Yeah, you just say, ah, oh, well.
Now, granted, due to, you know, school and everything, I've been stuck in a house for the last 2 years, so I haven't been out as much as I normally would. And when I do go out, I go out on the water, which there's not a lot of ticks on the lake.
Water ticks. The worst kind.
Yeah, well, I guess. I've never seen any, so I don't know. Maybe they're there, maybe they're not. Now, I will say, Tony, this year, the one thing people have been talking about is snakes. Snakes are bad this year already.
Killed two in our yard. Suspicious looking, you know, that kind of paisley plaid.
What, they slithered? That's suspicious to me.
Well, you know, what I did was, if it's, again, we've talked about this before, black snake, green snake, no problem. Brown snake Yeah, for the most part. I had one that I held out a tool, and the snake, rather than retreating, bit at the tool, lunged at it, struck
water
it.
Snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is land snake, and I thought, well, that's you don't do that unless you're packing something in your fangs, and so I killed it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have bit my hoe. That was a bad move.
Yeah, it was his famous last move.
Let me give this advice to all those snakes out there who are listening to our show. Don't bite the hoe. That's asking for trouble.
Gosh, I hope you came in on the beginning of that conversation.
The garden hoe, the gooseneck hoe. We'll make sure we clarify what, at any rate. Let's move on.
For once, I didn't say it.
Yeah, I know. One of the reasons why ticks, why it's so important that we avoid ticks, there is something called Powassan virus. And it's abbreviated POW, which I really like. You know, you don't want to catch POW. That just sounds really bad. It sounds like it's going to really knock you out.
It's a kind of food, Kung Pao chicken.
It's another one of those flaviviruses, along with West Nile, dengue, tick-borne encephalitis, Zika. All these viruses are the same thing. Basically, most people don't even have symptoms. A few get symptoms, sort of a flu-like illness. But every once in a while, this virus gets into your nervous system, and it just lights it up. You get inflammation of the brain, inflammation of the nerves, permanent nerve damage, and so forth.
Inflammation of the brain sounds bad.
Oh, it's bad. The Powassan, that's a 10% mortality rate. This is it's another one of those encephalitis, just like Zika, just like West Nile. Most people, no problems, but it can be bad. Now, Powassan, it was discovered in Ontario. It's a Great Lakes virus, so probably unless you get Great Lakes ticks, you'll probably be okay. But still, it is something to think about. The other thing I liked about the information I got on Powassan virus, another way to talk about reducing your risk of ticks. It says, one, know where the ticks live and where they're active, and that is in loose piles of leaves and in brush piles and also in high weeds. Use a repellent if you spend time in those areas. I keep DEET in my tractor toolbox, and anytime I get down, I'm going to spray myself if I got to go in that area. Pre-treat your clothing with permethrin. We talked about that. Don't put it on your skin. Wear light-colored clothing because that helps you spot the ticks easy. Talk with your veterinarian about products for your pets. Now, the other thing they mentioned is, of course, the inspection we talked about, and then manage those areas. Keep your lawns and your trails mowed short. Mow the trails wide if you've got fire breaks and trails so that you can walk. Remove leaves and brush. And they mentioned creating a landscape barrier of wood chips or rocks between mowed lawns and the woods. Don't let the ticks kind of come in from the woods. So, again, the Powassan people have some extra information for you, which I thought was very useful. And so I put that in. So, Rick, you're going to have to get serious about mosquitoes and ticks.
No. I choose. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just stay indoors. Watch TV.
Shell, you camp a lot.
Yes.
Do you? What's your tick strategy while you're camping?
We use the insect repellent.
You use DEET. Have you ever used permethrin on your clothing?
I have not. No.
It's a great idea. But it's just it requires planning ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we've used the Avon, the Skin So Soft. We've used that before.
Somewhat, you know, mixed results for mosquitoes, not a strong tick repellent.
Right.
At any rate, we at Health Matters do strongly recommend DEET. And if you do plan ahead, permethrin might be the way to go. If you know you're going to be camping or if you're boating and you're worried about boat ticks or
water
I'm not.
Ticks.
Trust yeah. me, I'm not.
I understand. That's you know that's your business. You don't want to face reality. It's none of our business.
I don't have time. I'm worried about water snakes.
That's true. And you feel like there's more water snakes this year.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You've been
well,
out.
Well, no. I'm just saying there's more in general. But yeah. I haven't been out this year yet.
Well, I think there's going to be more ticks. Again, it's been a warm winter here in Kentucky. It was a warm and wet spring. All the things that supposedly bring animal pests have happened, and certainly we're seeing that on the radio show.
So you mentioned a 10% mortality with the Powassan virus. Who's most susceptible? Really young, old?
Yeah, it's going to be really young, really old, which is for most of these things. But there are those inexplicable cases. Why does one person get an encephalitis, an inflammation of the brain, from West Nile or Zika? You know, do some people develop the birth defects of Zika and others don't? The rates are high. They're unconsciously high. What is it, 10%, I believe, of people infected, pregnant women infected with Zika develop that microcephaly, which is, again, is the virus attacking nerve cells. But why? What happens to the other 90%? What's the difference there? I don't really know, but yeah, in general, it's going to be small children and older folks. So this is just a reminder, both mosquitoes and ticks, if you have young children that are out and going to be playing outdoors, make sure you take time to protect them. Set up your yard so that you'll have fewer ticks and snakes in the yard, and also provide them with DEET if they're going to be going into the woods. So our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, are top six quick tick fixing tricks, and a bonus on this one with the Powassan virus. This was March 14th, the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. Lead author, Dr. Noel Campbell of the Regenstrief Institute in Indianapolis, just one state over from us. talks about people taking their Alzheimer's medicines. And there's something called acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. Acetylcholine is the chemical your nerves use to talk to each other. There is an acetylcholine esterase that breaks it down. If you stop the breakdown, there's more acetylcholine around. Maybe that would allow the nerves to talk to each other, which would preserve some mental functioning. These have been used for over 20 years now. The key thing is we do not know of any way to change the overall course of brain and nerve damage in Alzheimer's disease. However, these can modify behavior so that a person who was not able to interact with their family or take care of themselves becomes marginally able. Shelly, what do you think about these drugs?
I don't know. How do we prove they work? How do we prove they help? How do we prove if we stop the medicine, it accelerates the disease process? I don't know.
Now, keep in mind, what she's saying is it's not like you start somebody on these medicines and they begin thinking better than they have in the past month. You start them on these medicines to try to stop a decline in thinking. And that's the way it works. And the brand names on these, Aricept, Rasodyne, and Exelon are the big three that we use, these cholinesterase inhibitors. These researchers, and again, the guys in Indianapolis, they assigned 196 patients at four memory care practices to receive Aricept, Rasodyne, or Exelon. And they found that 38.8% of people stopped the Aricept, 53% stopped Rasodyne, and 59%, close to it, stopped the Exelon. They were adverse events, accounted for about three-quarters of the discontinuation, cost about one-quarter of the discontinuation. No differences among the three treatment groups in the adverse events. That's about 80% of people that took them. And the thing is, acetylcholine, as you might imagine, if it affects nerve function, it also affects the nerves to your bladder, the nerves to your bowels. It causes nausea. It causes a lot of gastrointestinal side effects. It also can sometimes backfire and make people more confused, musculoskeletal side effects and so forth. They mentioned fewer than half of the patients in the study actually went to full dose because they ran into side effects. And that's compared to about 10% in the drug company studies where they use very highly motivated people. So in the real world, you've got very high, almost half the people are going to stop the medicine the period of this trial, which was only a few months. Kind of discouraging. For me, mm-hmm. I've always had problems with those medications. They are costly. They'll cost you, for most part, you're looking at least $100 a month, and a lot of these medicines can get $300 to $600 depending on the brand that you purchase.
Yeah, so it's expensive, and then, you know, some of the individuals who take these medicines may not be able to fully articulate if they're having adverse effects, you know, if the medicine's bothering them, and, you know, that's concerning as well.
That's a good point. You're trying to protect mental function, and in fact, you're taking your loved one and making them just absolutely miserable. The experts recommend them, and I'm not here to tell you that they have no role. I'm just I'm pointing out 50% discontinuation rate within this trial, a lot of adverse effects, three-quarters of them discontinued due to adverse effects, half of them couldn't get to the full dose as well, the ones that were taking them, and that's a pretty poor track record for any medicine, in my opinion.
I think this is interesting, though. One in four stop these medicines because of cost. Last week, one in four stopped their cancer medications because of cost. So
yeah,
this is consistent with that.
Yeah, and these are mostly people going to be on Medicare, and they generally have pretty good plan. Medicare is a pretty good plan in terms of additional costs, but it is problematic. And we're going to stay with the medicines. Comey was dismissed because of adverse reactions. We're taking adverse reactions to medicine.
I think Rick's having an adverse reaction.
Time he brings out drugs, I daydream.
Rick just goes off, but he's trying to make sure I know how long we have. So he does this jazz hands things where he does his jazz hands and tells me how many minutes
we got.
Well,
that's a backhand, Tony.
Okay.
Forehand means you have 2 minutes.
Just
the backhand
don't strike my garden
one.
Hoe, and we'll be friends. That's where I draw the line. Next up, this
for
is from the Public Library of Science, and this was also in May of 2017. Sleeping pills. This was middle-aged people taking benzodiazepines. This is Valium, Librium, lorazepam, and some other benzodiazepines. But it is also the Lunesta and Ambien and the non-benzodiazepine. sleeping pills, and they looked at their chances of falling and breaking their hip. First of all, you need to know 300,000 people are hospitalized every year due to hip fracture. Costs are $10 to $15 billion if you're keeping score. This is Karen Donnelly, and she's from Cardiff University School of Medicine in England. A systematic review, 18 studies, and they looked at if you got one of these sleeping pills, and again, we're talking about medicines, Ativan, Valium, Librium, or no sleeping pill, and then also the non-benzodiazepine, and this is Ambien, Lunesta, and drugs like that versus no medicine for sleep. Short-term use, up to 14 days. Medium-term use, 15 to 30. Long-term use, more than a month. Everybody was at least age 50. Average age was around 65. If you took one of those older sleeping pills, you had about a 50% higher risk of falling and breaking your hip. If you took one of the newer ones, the so-called safer ones, you had a 70% higher risk of breaking your hip. If you used them short-term in that first 2 weeks, your risk was over twice as high of breaking your hip. They said, well, you need to be careful. You need to remove hazards at home, do visual correction, and do strength training to improve frailty. And I'm going, well, there's another obvious solution to this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
is you don't take sleeping pills. Now, I've got to say, we don't know. This is a really interesting problem. We don't know that the sleeping pills cause the hip fracture. I mean, that sounds crazy that we don't know that. But it could be people who need sleeping pills, in fact, are in some way more frail, more depressed, more anxious, whatever, and they're more likely to fall for that reason. I myself, after kind of looking at what happens to my patients on sleeping pills, I'm pretty convinced that they do.
Yeah, I don't like sleeping pills at all either.
And I firmly believe that sleeping pills can cause falls. Again, it's debatable. It's quite possible that the problem is not with the sleeping pills, but with people who need sleeping pills. But for whatever reason, if you find yourself needing a sleeping pill, realize that this is a very, very dangerous time in that first couple of weeks when you're taking the sleeping pill. Can you stand one more, Rick? One more
sure.
Drug? Rick's where he is. It doesn't really matter.
Right. I'll, at this point, I've become a timekeeper, and yeah. Well, yeah, pretty much just a timekeeper.
Well,
would you like to know how much time you have, sir?
Yeah, I appreciate you being a timekeeper. That's very thoughtful of you. This is Shelly sent me this, Shelly, and I thought it would be a good idea to talk about it.
I don't ever send him anything, Shelly, you brown noser.
This was CNN reported it, but the paper was published in the British Medical Journal, and it was May 10th. A person named Michelle Bolle, epidemiologist at the University of Montreal Hospital Research Center, they were trying to figure out. We know that arthritis-type medicines, that's ibuprofen, which is Motrin and other brands, or naproxen, which is Aleve, those type of drugs increase your risk of bleeding from your stomach. And when I first started practice, we used these things for everyone with arthritis, and we were regularly admitting people with bleeding ulcers. That has changed. That's one of the good things that happened to medicine. We don't do that. But they also increase your risk of a heart attack by around 20 to 50%. Now, if your risk is 1 in 1,000 and it goes to 2 in 1,000, it doubles, but it doesn't. That's not a real high risk. But you've got to keep in mind, heart attacks are in most states, they are the number one or number two cause of death. So it's a pretty common way to die, and this increases your risk by 20 to 50%. The question they asked was, when does it increase your risk? How long do you have? What's safe with these medicines? And what they found is the risk started increasing as early as 1 week with the use of the drug. The longer the risk appeared to decline after you stopped using it, but it takes about a month to fall off. 11% in the first, 11% between days 30 and 1 year. So if you're going to take ibuprofen or Motrin or Aleve, if you're going to take those medications, just be aware of the risk. You can take them once in a while. You can take them for a day or two. If you take them for a week, you're going to sustain a 20 to 50% increased risk in your chance of having a heart attack. We've got to take a break and come back with our third and final fracture portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Comey Over Show. Our salute to former FBI Director James Comey. And our sponsor for the final time.
It's the way you say former.
He's gone. I doubt he's going to be back.
Yeah,
FBI
you're
director.
Probably right about that.
And in the next 6 months, I'm almost certain he will not be the director of the FBI.
Yeah, I think you're probably absolutely
now, if
correct.
You've got a lawyer who apparently is pretty good, and he's 6'9", I would hire him. I would hire him.
Right.
I think he could.
Well, he put away Martha Stewart.
Yeah. And that took some legal abilities.
I would think so. I mean, yeah, 6'9", though. I don't. You want that around the office?
I want that defending me. I want you to try to come after me if I've got a 6'9" lawyer. You know?
You could just get a snake.
but I mean, just imagine 6'9" standing behind you go, are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are you done yet?
Well, I mean, nobody's going to enjoy it. I mean, that's probably why he was fired is Trump got tired of looking up at him.
Start that rumor, okay? That could just catch hold.
Just thinking about it. I mean, it's awkward being in a room with a guy that's 6'9". It's not comfortable for short people like me.
Well, I wouldn't know.
Talk to the belt buckle.
It's not uncomfortable
this is not
for
a good
me,
thing.
Tony.
I know. But
the president should probably be
but
the
I'm
tallest
6 foot
person in the room.
Two, yeah, so there's only a 7-inch differential.
I know, but you're basically in the same atmospheric layer as he is.
Exactly. We both know it's raining long before you.
That's not even close. Our sponsor for the final time, the Tick Fixers, their top 6 quick tick fixing tricks. And let me remind you, avoiding tick bites is the key. Arrange your yard. Provide a rock or a mulch barrier between your yard and the woods to try to find something that the ticks have to go over. You don't want, the woods and the leaves to be extending into your yard. And also, if your kids, obviously, keep the yard closely mowed if the kids are playing in the yard. And if they're going to go into the woods, you need to have they need to have deed on. If they're not going to go in the woods, then you need to make sure that they know that. But avoiding tick bites is key. Wear long pants, tuck the pant legs into the socks. It's a good look for you, and it also wards off the immature ticks on the ground. Inspect your skin, especially the armpit and groin areas, immediately after outdoor activities. If skin exposure is unavoidable, then apply an insect repellent, and the insect repellents have to contain DEET if you're going to prevent these ticks from biting you or the ones you love. Number 2, ticks are best removed as soon as possible. Again, if you're going to do this, you need to inspect yourself when you come in. You need to inspect yourself every day if you're camping or if you're outdoors. Number 3, use a blunt angled forceps or a blunt pair of tweezers. Don't use sharp tweezers. Don't puncture the tick. Number 4, once the tick is removed, wash the bite area with soap and water or with an antiseptic. Also, wash your hands. Place the tick on the head of a large match and set fire to the tick.
Let it roll.
I mean, you guys are so vindictive.
Well, you know, the tips of those, I think it's phosphor on the tip of those matches. Yeah. They go up so nice. I mean, they make a nice big orange flame around. I mean, it's great.
Yeah. Tony. Well, you could put it in an empty peanut butter jar and send it to the landfill. Where it will live out the remainder of its days in the peanut butter jar.
Why would you do that?
That's not
well, because
fun.
I wouldn't leave any peanut butter in for it.
No.
Well, then what's it going to eat?
Yeah, I know. Well, it would starve to death.
So now you're being inhumane. At least I'm pulling the Band-Aid off.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
So to speak.
But I've got my hammer on my front porch, and that tick will.
Have you ever heard of the term a blaze of glory?
Number 5, routine antibiotics are not indicated. If you're pregnant or if the area has a serious tick-borne disease like Lyme disease, or again, then you might. By the way, I didn't mention this, but the disease we talked about, Powassan virus, there is no treatment for that. But Lyme disease, there is an antibiotic treatment. So if you're in a very high incidence of Lyme disease, which Kentucky, by the way, is not, then antibiotics may be indicated. But for routine tick bites, no. Also check the size and color of the tick. Brown and pencil point is deer tick. Brown with a white collar, size of a pencil eraser, more likely dog ticks. Brown to black with a white splotch on the back are those Lone Star ticks, very aggressive biters, and they also can associate with a really big red rash that comes out around the tick bite and looks a lot like Lyme disease, but it in fact is southern tick-associated rash illness. That is our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, with their top six quick tick fixing tricks. I got this specifically to get Rick off the timer roll and actually to discuss things with us. We've got, this is a discussion item. I've got two discussion items for the final fractional portion. This is a blog by a surgeon called The Skeptical Scalpel. This was on May 4th.
Is that something you want? Do you want a skeptical scalpel?
Yeah, this is
when you go see your surgeon, do you want to think skeptical?
Okay, he is skeptical about all this newfangled stuff, whatever newfangled stuff is.
So he's old.
He's an old guy. Yeah, absolutely.
He's an old dude.
It's a man and it's old. I know that just by the way this person writes. All right, so he talks about surgical robots.
Great.
Okay. And he mentions there's an article in the Science Robotics. They had different levels of autonomy for surgical robots. Now, you think about autonomy. The lowest level surgical robot, you put your hands and some controls on the robot, and the robot's hands move when your hands move. And this is really Da Vinci, is a way of steadying your hands and doing very fine movements.
Or you being somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Like space.
You can transmit to that robot, but that robot does exactly what you instruct it to do. There is a level 3 autonomy. There is now a robotic device that will close the skin. You don't move your hands. You simply position the robot, and the robot measures the skin and closes it and does a better job than surgical assistants routinely do. They do a fine job. This is not a slam on surgical assistants, but this thing...
this guy doesn't complain about it while he does it.
Yeah, and it's a level 3 surgical robot. A level 5 autonomous surgical robot has not yet been invented, but it would be if it did surgery.
Didn't you see the movie Passengers?
Yes, I did see Passengers.
There's an autonomous 5. That tube was essentially what you're saying. It was the level 5 robot.
Level 5 robot. Practicing medicine will require FDA clearance, but also might require licensing by a medical organization, board certification. I don't know. Maybe you look up when you're taking your certification exam.
Do you think that robot could pass its test?
Oh, I think they will program the robot to pass a board certification exam.
I don't know. I've heard those things are kind of hard.
Yeah. but I'll tell you, if I had the app inside me, I would just whip through that thing.
Well, you know what we say about software, right? The IT guys, right? We're only as smart as our dumbest software. So
right. You'd
have to make sure somebody pretty smart makes the software.
Wouldn't that be something you had a robot? And let's say this one robot failed the exam. Would you certify all robots of this particular variety if one of them took it? Or would you insist that each and every robot took the board?
Because you said autonomous, right? So each one's their own, right?
Yeah.
So...
But, you know, I mean, again, with emissions test, with emissions testing, you test every car because they're in different environments and so forth.
Right.
So that's wrong. But, I mean, some safety features, you just test a few representative models.
Just out of curiosity, is this exactly where you wanted this conversation to go?
I think the idea, I look up from my board exam, and there's a robot taking the board exam. And
A. Yeah. He's answering A on the questions. he's just trying to get to
just
the end of the test.
He's got a statistics package, and he knows if he gets close, he passes. I understand that. But the other thing is, if there's a robot taking the test, what if I just whack him? What if I take his pencil away? You know, would a robot complain if I took the pencil away, or would they keep marking with their imaginary
How sad
pencil?
Is it that we're talking about a robot that uses a pencil?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't they submit their results electronically?
I wouldn't allow that. I mean, it could be cheating.
A robot could actually have telepathy, Tony.
So could the human taking it use a computer?
Yeah.
Google.
Yeah,
their
what
answers,
about that?
Or, yeah.
I mean, let's level the playing field here. If we're both taking board exams, I want a computer too. Because he's got a computer. Why can't I have it? All right.
So, but, so when he goes into the testing environment, he has to untether. He has to detach himself from Google. That levels the playing field. Let's be honest.
It does a little bit, but I might just put a nail in his processor to slow him down a little bit to my speed.
Now, he's not going to get tired.
I know. That's the thing. I can't read the question as fast.
Although his battery could run out.
I love it. How about a magnet? Let's throw a few things up. I'll flash some lights.
Okay, so let's assume for a moment that he passes his boards.
I get very far. Here's the thing. If we allow this robot to do all the surgeries,
right.
I'm the surgeon. He's doing all the surgeries. I am watching.
You know they'll never let him bill.
No. Absolutely not.
He'll never be able to bill Medicare.
He's in a bigger house than I do. That's for sure. But what if he's doing all the surgeries, and I haven't done a surgery in several months? Now, you know, I mean, out-of-hand stuff is not something you can just walk away from and walk back to.
So does he have to do you ever have to do it again?
That's the question. The idea is I'm going to be there just in case the robot screws up. I mean, that's, you know, when you look at driverless cars and so forth, you want to have the human engaged in case the driver.
So hear me out on
up.
This one, Tony.
Okay, I'm listening.
So hear me out. When my daughters were 8, maybe 9, maybe they were a little older, maybe 10. We've talked about this on the radio show, but I'm certain the current listening audience probably doesn't know me as well as they're about to.
Brace yourselves.
Guess what? When I was 12, I was heavy into roller skating.
Right.
Takes acuity, takes coordination, takes thing. Now let's progress 25 years. I have not roller skated. And I'm at a birthday party at, guess where? A roller skating rink. Hey, I used to could skate really fast. I was really good. I could, you know, skate backwards, forwards, sideways, turns, twists, jumps.
Rick was very, of Frankfurt were his playground.
And there, no truer statement could be said on this radio show. That was fact. But you know what?
Did you fall?
No.
Oh.
No, and I was able to immediately turn and go backwards. I mean, I was, from the moment I got on those skates, there was a little bit of, okay, I got to get this balance thing right. But then once I found it, in a couple seconds, 15 seconds maybe, off to the races.
Riding a bicycle.
It was the riding the bicycle analogy. So part of me wonders if...
All right.
Now, Tony, you don't saw trees down all the time, but you seem to remember every year when it's time to do it.
I do remember that.
Granted, it doesn't require precision.
But let's go. That's a good point. And let's go the other way. And we have talked about this some. The introduction of calculators.
Exactly. Which is a robot.
Right. It is a robot that does mathematics for you. And now you walk into a restaurant, and if you give them some change that was not programmed into the cash register, there is panic. I told them at McDonald's how much change I needed. And,
but they're not allowed to trust you.
They went to get the manager because they could not do the math.
Right.
And so you can see then somewhere between your roller skating ability and the cashier's mathematical ability is what happens after we neglect something.
But wouldn't you say that I think the question then becomes is do new surgeons get trained by the robots or not trained at all? Because I think what your experience at McDonald's is more of a they never really got trained how to do it, as to where what we're talking about is a surgeon does it, but then hands over kind of the daily responsibilities to the robot, but still has learned to do it, right?
Has learned to do it. Now,
you could argue that people at McDonald's have learned basic math and should be able to do basic arithmetic, not English. English.
I understand. Not pronunciation.
I can go pretty deep in calculus.
Okay, fair enough.
English, on the other hand,
not good.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Brian Courtney and to Eric Bilber here with our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a prescription radio show used to treat adults with moderate to severe psoriasis that involve large areas or many areas of the body.
Health Matters affects your immune system. It may increase your risk of having having serious side effects such as infections. Health Matters may lower the ability of your immune system to fight infections and may increase your risk of infections.
Your doctor should check you for tuberculosis before you start listening to our show. If your doctor feels that you are at risk for TB, you may be treated with medicine for TB before you begin listening and during the first fractional portion of our show.
Your doctor should watch you closely for signs and symptoms of TB during Health Matters. Do not listen to our show if you have TB infection.
Before listening to Health Matters, tell your doctor if you are being treated for an infection, have an infection that does not go away, or keeps coming back, or if you have TB.
After did we say that before? How many times are we going to say that?
I copied it off the website. After our show starts, call your doctor right away if you have any signs of an infection.
Or if you have TB.
New cases of inflammatory bowel disease have happened with Health Matters and can sometimes be serious. If you have inflammatory bowel disease, tell your doctor if you have worsening disease symptoms during the show or develop new symptoms of stomach pain and diarrhea.
Or if you have TB.
Or if you're allergic to latex. Your radio may contain latex.
If your doctor decides that you or your caregiver may listen at home, you should receive training on the right way to prepare your radio. Do not try to listen to Health Matters yourself until you or your caregiver has been shown how to use your radio by a doctor or a nurse.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.